On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we look back on the Raiders' thrilling overtime win over the Miami Dolphins, the good, the bad, the ugly from that game. We talk about who should get the most credit for the Raiders' defense playing so well, and is the Raiders' defensive success sustainable? I say it is. We preview Raiders' Chargers coming up on Monday Night Football, talk about all the receivers playing in tandem, and Soto responds to his critics for all his Derek Carr hate. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into the nightmares. The
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. I'm RJ Clifford. He's Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. Raiders now and still 3-0, back-to-back overtime wins at home. First game, third game. With the Dolphins on Sunday, 31-28. And this has forced me into a moral quandary, Soto. I'm hoping you're with me. So as you know, I have a flagpole in my
pocket. You're relying on my moral compass. Let's do it.
That's desperate, man. Your moral compass is like sitting on a giant magnet.
And we just it's just
around, blowing with the wind.
Whatever benefits me, that's where it points.
So as you know, I have a 20-foot flagpole in my front yard, and I probably wear the stars and stripes on there, right? I got the American flag up most days of the year. But on Sundays, I put up the American flag or the Raiders flag, right? It's like, okay, there's plenty of room for both, right? But if the Raiders are doing well, like it's a big win, I'll leave it up all week. You know, if they lose, I'll leave it up for a day or two, and then I'll put the American flag back up, you know. But I haven't put the Raiders flag down since week one. It's just been up there the whole time. And the old stars and stripes are getting left out. But with this run, I don't know if I can take down the Raiders flag. So I'm worried, Soto, that maybe my neighbors thought I converted to, like, Canadian or something because I haven't put up the American flag in 3 weeks.
I don't think anyone can – confuse your patriotism or your loyalties. You have a big American flag sticker on the back of your truck, the back that's window true. Of your truck. I think you're okay.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just hoping like the casual neighbors that don't know, you know, how much I bleed red, white, blue.
Fuck the casual neighbors. They don't know you. They don't deserve to know you.
Well, I have a Chiefs fan, a neighbor about like 7 or 8 houses down that put up their like Chiefs flag all Sunday. So I'm like, okay, well, we can counteract that, you know, especially 3-0 versus 1-2. But you know, my only concern is like, obviously my American flag keeps terrorists from striking Long Beach. So like, fact, there's been no terrorist attack in the city of Long Beach since I've got my American flagpole. I mean, that's just an evidence and facts that can't be disputed. So as much as like, I think the flag is helping the Raiders and their win streak, we're also leaving the city susceptible to terrorist attacks. So this is the juggling act I have to do, Soto.
Well, at least your house is going to be safe because nobody wants to attack a Raiders house.
True. True. Yeah. I got American flag, either that or a Raiders flag, and 2 loud pit bulls. I feel like we're the safest house in Long Beach.
I think you're okay.
Knox. Yeah, we should be all right.
Little do they know, they'll probably lick you to death before anything else.
They're super scary on the other side of the fence, but you get on the inside of the fence and they're your best friends.
It's just butt wiggles and freaking licks and here, play with my toy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hopefully none of the bad guys know that though.
Yeah. I don't have to know that.
All right. Well, Raiders 31, Dolphins 28. Let's take a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly, Soto.
Right away, starting off. So the good, we'll start off with the obvious. Mm-hmm. Derek Carr. 26 of 43, 386 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. It's still a good game.
Yep.
Zero fumbles.
Big.
So process yep. is going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Barber, Jesus Christ, 23 carries, 111 yards, a touchdown, 3 receptions, 31 yards. So 26 touches, 142 yards, and a touchdown. So
Peyton Barber,
man,
Josh Jacobs, not Jalen Richard.
I said it during the last week's show. I said this team can get run on. They can get run on, and they were susceptible. Their defensive line gets some pressure. mm-hmm. but they're susceptible to the run, and we proved it here.
Hopefully this will be like an eye-opener for John Gruden a little bit. When we've got a first-round draft pick starting running back in Josh Jacobs, the most expensive backup running back in football in Kenyon Drake, the most expensive third-string running back in football in Jalen Richard, who's making $3.5 million, which is more money than our starting all-pro running back. And then Peyton Barber, who we pick up off the scrap heap,
yep.
has the best running game of the season for the Raiders. If that's not evidence for John Gruden to say, all right, maybe let's not invest a ton of money at running backs when we can just pull up anybody and they can run well for us. Like, it's literally like the best running game of the season so far has been our fourth string practice squad running back. That should be an eye opener for what running backs mean on this team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things go into that. I, in my scouting, the Dolphins just weren't good against the run. Who's to say that, you know, fucking Jacobs wouldn't have run for 160 yards? You know, we don't know that. But yeah, he did have a really good game. Mm-hmm. Henry Ruggs III. Now, not just his overall stats. I'm not even going to talk about his overall stats.
Oh, no. Bring it specific.
He had two sideline toe tap catches.
Yep.
And he had a leaping catch over Xavien Howard, probably one of the top two or three corners in the league. Mm-hmm. This is proving that he is not just a deep threat, that he can make plays other ways on the football field.
Yeah, which is great. Because we had all, you know, John Gruden and I assume, or, you know, I know we assumed this, and I assume John Gruden was planning on this, is using Henry Ruggs like his Tyreek Hill, even though he's really not Tyreek Hill, right? Like, Tyreek Hill isn't fast just because of 40 time. He's got, like, good, great speed changing direction, good start-stop speed, good at finding open areas in the zone, great at, like, feinting, you know, safeties and corners. Like, these are all things that they're all big part, right? And so it's like, okay, Henry Ruggs is going to do those things. We've seen some bits of that, right? Some jet sweeps, obviously deep threats, obviously decoys deep. But now he's like fighting for 50-50 balls and doing some screens and getting hit in slants and stride, like all these other parts of his game that we saw in college, but we didn't really see John Gruden implement with him. And I truly believe that was more of a Henry Ruggs issue than it was a Derek Carr, John Gruden scheming issue. Ruggs just wasn't that receiver, right? He was a rookie, and he just wasn't really developed that way yet. Now it's feel like it's an FU to the critics. Like, okay, all right, I'm still going to go deep, but I'm also going to like win these 50-50 balls against some quality cornerbacks.
Yeah, rounding off your routes, or Rory would say here, roots. Routing off your routes in college because of your speed is going to get you open. Rounding mm-hmm. off your routes in the pros is just going to get you blanketed. You have to have that solid technique. And Tyreek Hill, as far as fast as he is, his biggest strength is how he sets up his corners, how he mm-hmm. sets up defenders. He's just so good at setting them up and getting open and using that threat of his speed to get open and to create space. And that's what Ruggs is learning to do. Moving along.
Real quick on the receiving end.
Yeah.
Great stat that we picked up. The Raiders have four players with 200 plus yards receiving. Henry Ruggs, Darren Waller, Brian Edwards, Hunter Renfrow. No other team has more than two. And this is the first time in NFL history that a team has had four players reach 200 receiving yards in the first three games of a season. Now, I said at the beginning of the season when we were predicting kind of how everyone's going to do, and I said, I think Waller's going to have a step back season, not because he's going to play worse, not because he's going to get hurt, not because Carr's going to like not throw it to him as much. I think just because everyone else is going to come up.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, like we're going to see Brian Edwards improve, Henry Ruggs improve. Renfrow's always going to be an important target. Brought Drake in to take some more passes out of the backfield. Like, these are all things. Now, I might be wrong. Waller might still have the same number of receptions, catches, and touchdowns only because we're throwing the ball way more, right? But his percentage of targets and percentage of receptions in this offense has gone down, not because he's playing worse, but because everyone else is playing better.
I mean, he's averaging like almost seven catches a game, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So over 17 games, it's 119 catches. That's quite a few catches. That's a little bit more than last year.
Is our offense better when Waller is getting 15, 18 targets a game, or if he's getting 8 or 9 targets a game?
Honestly, it's the same because the ball is still moving down the field. If the thing you have to look at is Carr's completion percentage, whether he's throwing it, he's feeding Waller, or he's spreading the ball around, the ball is still moving down the field. Yeah. So it's up to what the defense gives him. And, you know, Carr's doing a much better job of identifying his targets deep to shallow, and he's giving these guys chances to make plays, and they are.
And it's not like, like, you can always kind of tell the trend of an offense by who's the leading receiver, right? Like, if you're like X receivers, you're leading targets. Oh, they're going deep. They're throwing bombs. If you're running backs leading them in targets, it's like, okay, that's a bunch of check downs. You know, they're just like running little check down plays. If you're tight ends leading you in receptions, generally that means you're throwing a lot of like 5 to 10 yard, like overs, outs, things like that. But Darren Waller's not your average tight end, right? If Darren Waller can be leading in receptions, and that could mean it can be all like little like over and under routes, or it could be him going deep in 4 verts. Like, he's as much of a target in a vertical offense as Henry Ruggs, Brian Edwards, or anyone else. So it's like, normally I would feel like if your tight end is leading your team in receptions, it means you're just kind of dinking and dunking in a low to medium range. Mm-hmm. Waller can mean anything. It could mean you're going deep to him all the time. It could be screens to him all the time. It could be short passes to him all the time. It's just going to be a nightmare for defensive coordinators to game plan against this offense when you can go either 19 receptions to Waller or spread the ball completely evenly between 4 players.
Yeah, I think 5 players or 6 players had receptions over 20 yards again. So he's it's not just, well, this player is going to get this ball in this area. It's any one of our receiving threats can take the ball, you know, 20 plus yards any given time. So it's a problem for the opposing defenses for sure.
Yep.
Let's focus on our defense for a second.
Let's do it. My favorite topic. And I can't believe what a weird time it is, right?
Damn, right?
Like, yes, let's talk about the defense out of enjoyment, out of excitement, out of a sense of pride. Let's bang our chest and talk about our defense and not, okay, well, let's shit all over our defense for losing us another game.
Dude, Denzel Perryman, 14 tackles, 10 solo. That's big. That means he had his fucking face in those holes, just like RJ likes it.
Giggity.
All motorboating. The way in there. Motorboating.
And he, remember when actually, we got him? He was such an afterthought when we picked him up.
I didn't think he was an afterthought. He was a pretty highly rated linebacker last year. PFF at least rated him pretty high. I think it was like in the top 5 or something like that.
What do we trade for him? Like a 6th rounder for a 7th or something like that?
We gave up a 5th, and we got him back plus a 7th.
Sick. Okay.
I think.
What a steal.
Yeah, dude.
What a steal. We're paying him a couple mil, right? Like 3 mil?
We're not paying him that much because his bonus had already kicked in with Carolina.
Yeah, he picked up his contract.
But his bonus had already kicked in.
Okay.
So his bonuses had already been paid by Carolina.
He's our new Gerald McCoy. As our like the biggest steal contract right now.
I don't want to talk about Gerald McCoy. Come on, man. I still feel terrible.
Me too, but I can't believe we don't miss him.
Yeah, right. Imagine if we did have him. Fuck. Okay, moving along.
Corey Littleton might actually be good when we have to like all these 1-year contracts on our defensive tackles. Maybe we can get McCoy on like another cheap one, you know, because some of these guys are gonna have like Nelson Aguilar. Like, you're going to have one good season with the Raiders, and then you're going to want $22 million 2 years. And be like, we're not going to give that to you. But we could bring McCoy back.
Yeah, I saw him drop a couple of passes against, when I was watching film against, when they were playing the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Like, an Aguilar dropped a couple of balls. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, like, obviously,
$13 million treating you.
Like, obviously, like, thank you, you know. Nelly never dropped for like your contributions last season. Like, I'm great. I'm so happy for you. And then generally like ex Raiders I root for, but I'm rooting against Aguilar only because I want it to be proof that Derek Carr in this offense made Nelson Aguilar. It's not like Aguilar was so good and he was getting held back in Philly and now he's finally able to flourish. It's like, no, what he was in Philly is who he is. And the Raiders and Derek Carr and John Gruden brought out the absolute best in him. And he's never going to reach those heights again. I'm convinced of that, and I want my call-outs to be correct. Like, I want to be proven right, so I'm wishing bad things on Aguilar.
And, like, Mac Jones is going to bring out the best in him either.
Nope.
All right, Corey Littleton. No, like, egregious run stops from him. Like,
first
no,
time ever?
God.
First game ever where you didn't, like, just slap your forehead and say, I can't believe Corey missed that.
He actually shed some blocks. More often than not, he was diverting the running back, not making the play himself, but he was kind of, like, forcing the running back into people like Perryman to make mm-hmm. the tackle. But, yeah, no crazy mistakes by Littleton on the run. But he had 10 tackles, 7 solo, and a pass defense on a big third down play. So, good job, Corey Littleton.
It's always a better defense when your linebackers are leading the team in tackles, not like your free safety.
God damn, right?
As much as I like seeing Jonathan Abram just like plow head forward into the box and just like start wrecking fools, like if it gets to his level, that means they're getting 8 yards. If it's all of our linebackers, you know, doing the damage, that means, okay, good. Those are the guys that should be leading the team in tackles. The guys like right in the trenches early, not free safeties, kept, you know, stopping all these touchdowns barely.
Yeah. I have some weird stats. One from Jonathan Abram and then one from Casey Hayward. So okay. I'll
get to those. Tuned. Okay.
Max Crosby, 6 Mad total Max. Pressures, 4 quarterback hits, and 2 pressures or mm-hmm. 2 hurries, excuse me. So 6 total pressures. Yannick Ngakoue.
Let's talk about Max real quick and just the season that he's having, right? He's not going to get the same like highlight reel, SportsCenter top 10, mainstream love because his sack rate is kind of low. Mm-hmm. But again, I keep saying it over and over this season, I'd rather your pressure rate be super high and your sack rate be low to middle than the other way around, where you're just like flukily getting all these sacks, you know? Because it's just sustained success. Like pressure rate is a better gauge of sustained success for an end than sack rate. And he's got the most pressures this season and most quarterback hits this season over Chandler Jones, Myles Garrett, Harold Landry. He's doing what's most important, disrupting the backfield, just causing havoc in the backfield. Of course, I'd love for him to be Khalil Mack and getting strip sacks every game and stuff like that.
Intercepting passes, scoring touchdowns.
Right, like, of course I would love that. On top of that, right? Of course, I want Max Crosby to do those things on top of what he's doing. But this, to me, is more important. Sustained pressure. And it's also going to have people not on your radar as much. Like, if you're in this, you know, if you're going to strip sack every game and everyone's you're in SportsCenter top 10 every week, like, people are going to pay attention to you more. Max Crosby's just doing pressures. Maybe they're going to, like, only focus on double-teaming Yannick Ngakoue. Or maybe they're only going to, like, all right, we're fine with a tight end on Max Crosby's side. No, you're not. Nope, he'll make you pay.
That's not
you may not
work.
Get the sack, but he's gonna ruin that play for you.
Well, yeah, and you take a look at the Yannick Ngakoue had 6 pressures as well. He had 1 hit and 5 hurries. So it's like, what? Pick your poison, either end. And one thing that's interesting, I took a look at Villanueva's from the tackle from Pittsburgh who got abused by both Ngakoue and Crosby when the Raiders played the Steelers. He had a 92, or I think it was a 92 rating in week 3. Hmm. So it wasn't like he's shot and he's done. You know, he bounced back and played really well the following week. So they did that against a guy who can, you know, who still can play. So I have 2 funky stats here. Jonathan Abram has not missed a snap this year. He's played every single snap, defensive snap, like something like 200 some odd snaps.
He's well rested from only playing 1 game in his rookie year.
And, yeah, right. And kind of just running around last year.
And he's not beat up from missing all those tackles last season. You know what I mean? Dude. So it's like getting hurt his rookie year, missing all those tackles his second year. He's fresh, baby. He's fresh. He's only played 1 full season. He's not beat up from all those big hits because he kept whiffing. He's ready to rock, man. It's like those running backs from the Big 12. Like, they don't have any like wear and tear on them because they're all from all these all like air raid offenses. So they have all this energy when they get to the NFL and they're not beat up. That's Jonathan Abram. Missing games and whiffing tackles means he's fresh.
And he's playing like it too. He's playing really well. One last funky stat for you. Number 3 in the league. The third best corner QBR against is Casey Hayward, 42.7.
The only completion that he has allowed all season was that safety against the Dolphins. That was the only time a quarterback has complete. He has one completion against him, and he turned it into a safety.
He turned it into a safety. He turned it into 2 points on the ball. Dude, he's playing really well, man. And he, everyone thought he was shot last year when he was with the Chargers. And, you know, he's doing well. So
and he's playing so different than I thought he would. Like, I thought he'd be, because he's a little long in the tooth, I thought he'd kind of be like Charles Woodson in the second stint with us, where he was just like air, like ball hawk, right? Like, not going in for big hits, not playing aggressive, but just kind of playing center field and getting a bunch of picks. He's not doing that at all. He's not
in everyone's pocket, man.
He's just, yeah, he's right in everyone's face, breaking up passes, getting like running up and getting safeties, not, you know, playing off ball, just looking for interceptions. Great, fine. Like, I wish we had some more turnovers on our defense, but I don't want Hayward chasing anything at all.
He's doing great, man. He's doing great, and he's turning back the clock. It's weird what a new familiar system and a new change of scenery can do for you, and he's playing really well.
So that's the good.
That's the good. So let's go on to the bad.
Okay. Look, very short list you have on the bad.
Very short list.
Very short list.
I don't want to pick on Alex Leatherwood, but goddamn, man, he's just not getting any better pass-wise.
Yeah.
32.4 pass block rating. He allowed 6 total pressures, including 4 hits on Derek Carr. This is not good, guys. He's allowing a handful of hits every single game, and by far the most hits on the team, on Derek Carr. And you know, Derek Carr makes this offense run. And if he's getting hit, it just takes one. Like we saw a lot, you know, in 2016, it just takes one hit to change our season. And Alex Leatherwood's given up a handful of hits a game, man. So that's got to get cleaned up.
Yeah, Alex Leatherwood and Andre James have really, and these are the two guys you're supposed to be counting on, right? A first round pick, a brand new center that we were all told was going to play great, gave him a great contract before he ever started once, before he was ever like a true starter on our offense. And again, we say it every time, and until we're proven wrong, we're going to keep saying it. If you could trust any coach on the Raiders team, it's Tom Cable. He's proven time and time again, he can get the best out of his offensive line. He can make guys work. I think with time, I'm not worried about Leatherwood long term, but I am worried about Leatherwood this season.
I'm more worried about Carr than Leatherwood.
Yeah.
And I tried, guys. I tried to find something else to pick on, but it just jumped out at me. 4 quarterback hits and such a low pass blocker rating.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have looked. I could have put Andre James. He had a pretty poor run blocker rating, but I mean, Peyton Barber still had over 100 yards, 5 yards of carry. I mean,
all those muff snaps by James that I'm more worried about. Like they're kind of like they haven't been a big topic of discussion because we've recovered all of them. Mm-hmm. Raiders have recovered every single one of his muff snaps, and he has so many. Once like a fourth quarter drive to win the game, he muffs it. It's gonna start like not to be a negative Nancy. Knock on wood, it doesn't happen, but. You don't muff that many snaps and recover every one of them and keep that sustainable.
Like not over a season. You're going to lose a couple.
Over 17 games, it will cost us majorly at some point this season.
Yeah. Another bad, more so a bad play. And this is kind of the thing that we have to live with when you have defensive ends that are always around the quarterback and who are rushing really hard. But this one was a pretty bad play. It was pretty late. Yeah. Max Crosby's roughing the passer penalty on 3rd and 7 when the Dolphins were moving the ball and trying to tie the score at the end of regulation.
It wasn't super egregious. It was
late. It was pretty bad. It was late.
Every Raider is going to be called for it. We'll put it that way. Like, yeah. If you're wearing silver and black, you will always get that roughing the passer penalty.
Okay. I mean, if you want to put it that way, I thought it was late. I mean, late is late, especially if you're hitting a quarterback. You can hit a running back a yard out of the fucking, you know, a sideline, whatever. But if you hit a quarterback that late, you're going to get called on that. So that's it for the bad. Now, something interesting, a little different for the ugly.
Okay.
I chose the ugly, John Gruden's game management. Now, I picked 4 instances that could have dramatically affected the game, but we won in spite. Of these 4 instances. The first one, going for it on 4th down in the first quarter on your 34-yard line.
I like that one. It didn't pan out. And So it's a couple things. So metrics wise, statistically, it made sense, right? Like if you look at the pure metrics, right? Fourth and one, these are the situations, this is time left. It made sense. On the flip side, the Raiders are terrible on third and one, fourth and one. We're really bad. Derek Carr's a bad quarterback sneaker. Obviously, our center's brand new and not doing great. We have backup guards in between him. So it's one of those weird situations where it's like, I feel like John Gruden was just trying to prove that he wasn't super conservative. And then he got conservative later in the game. So it's like you were aggressive at the wrong time, even though it was kind of a smart move, and conservative at the wrong time, even though it was the wrong move. It's like he's consistently inconsistent with his consistency.
And that's, and we've talked about that elsewhere too, because it's being consistently inconsistent when you talk about his player evaluation.
Yeah.
He takes a Cleveland Farrell at four because he's such a high character guy, but he brings in Antonio Brown. He brings in guys like Richie Incognito. He brings in these other guys that don't have the best history of character.
Yeah.
I agree with you if it was 0-0. If it was a 0-0 game, okay. But you're already down 7-0 coming off of a pick six. You don't do that at that time. That's not the time to do it. That's the time to push them back, make them because you already know for a fact. If I know this and I scouted this, John Gruden has to know it.
Yeah.
The way that the Dolphins win is by creating turnovers and creating short fields for themselves. You've already seen them make a turnover into points already. So now you have the chance of doing the second thing that they do to help themselves win, which is create short fields. So I wouldn't want to give them that even the opportunity. Make them drive the length of the field. But yeah,
I disagree. I disagree.
Especially even down 7-0.
Especially down 7-0, right? Because your offense was sputtering, right? You want to give them a spark. I believe in you. Let's do it. Let's get pumped up. If they would have got that fourth and one, the momentum would have been huge. The morale on the sideline would have been bonkers. And two, the metrics say you're supposed to. Like statistically, fourth and one in that position, you know, it's not like 80-20. It's pretty close, but you're supposed to go for it in that situation. And especially Gruden, who is so conservative. Other coaches, I can see your argument. Gruden, any chance he has to show like just a little bit of faith in his, a little bit of like, hey, we're gonna not be the most conservative play callers in football. I'm for it. Even though it didn't work out, it could have cost us the game. Big picture, I like it.
Yeah, I still don't like it. I think maybe at the 40 at the 44 yard line, maybe, but the 34, you're already giving him a field goal. You're already giving him 3 points if you're on the 34 yard line. So the second thing about John Gruden's game management is calling a timeout after he who was it, Barber, got stuffed on the goal line instead of just throwing the challenge.
Yeah, I think it was wasn't it a pass to Drake? Was it a pass to Kenyon Drake, right?
It was a stop play at the goal line instead of throwing the challenge flag, which you could have overturned the ruling and kept your timeout. He just called the timeout. So yeah. Then the booth can review it. It's like, what are you doing? You're wasting timeouts. That's a valuable commodity and you're just wasting it for no reason. So that was the second head scratcher. Another ugly sequence was the exact opposite of what he did and what he was trying to prove in the first quarter on that fourth and one. You needed to ice the game, right? You wanted to ice the game. You have the lead. You have the ball. There's about 4 minutes left in the game. And you run two running plays up Andre James's ass, who has not been run blocking well in the game so far. Mm-hmm. You get negative 2 yards, and then you gain back a yard. And then in an obvious passing situation, you do not max protect Derek Carr, and he gets sacked for minus 15 yards. So out of that sequence, you put Derek Carr in a third and long, obvious passing situation when you want to run out the clock. You ran off 1:07, and you got your quarterback hit.
Yeah, he went back to being his predictable John Gruden run, pass.
Two runs and a
run,
pass.
Run, pass.
Yeah, so that's another bad one, and that's just we got to make sure that we look at this stuff objectively and. Having that sequence that late in the game, you want to talk about trusting your offense. Your offense has been moving the ball and not doing a lot of three and outs. running, you know, two run plays up your center's ass and then, you know, not max protecting your quarterback on an obvious passing situation late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough, man. That's a tough sequence right there. And it's why I put it on the ugly. And the fourth of the four of the ugly was the game-winning field goal sequence. Just like I was screaming, like, kick the ball now. Just kick it.
Yeah, you're in overtime.
You're in overtime.
Field goal wins it. Ball. It's third and one. It's a chip shot. Carlson's been nailing 50-yarders without – he hasn't missed a field goal all season. Missed an extra point, but hasn't missed a field goal all season, including some 50-yarders. And it's third and one chip shot range, and you're running it up the middle with your running back who already fumbled on the goal line?
Yeah.
What? Just kick the damn thing.
Kick the damn thing. Once you're, I mean, he gained like what, 4 yards the last play?
He could have kicked yardage. That thing three plays earlier.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He could have kicked it three plays earlier and it would have been what, 4 yards difference?
You're running off the clock for no reason. Field goal wins the game. It's not, you're like, are you really worried that Jacoby Brissett is going to have 2 minutes left on the clock? Like, come on, man.
It's just a head scratcher, man. I don't understand what he was thinking. Despite all, and here's the worry that I have. The issues that we saw managing the clock and managing the game against the Ravens and the issues that we saw against the Dolphins, you're not going to recover every single muff snap. You're not going to be able to overcome all these mistakes against a good NFL team. Yeah. And we beat two good NFL teams already, even with these mistakes. It worries me a little that we may see some of that heartbreak flip the other way because of some of these bad decisions.
I feel like the ugly that you pointed out with Gruden, like perfectly surmised where he's at right now, like leading up to week four in 2021, because I feel like he's starting to listen to some of his criticism. All the deep metrics said that like Derek Carr in a clean pocket is one of the most dangerous deep throwers in football. Like he's insane. Like he's literally the most accurate deep thrower in football in a clean pocket. And now he's being able to like move around the pocket a lot better than he has usually. Right. Normally he was just like a statue in there. Now he's not a running quarterback by any means, but he's like, all right, let me move up into the pocket. Let me shimmy outside looking downfield. He's doing that so well that he's like, okay, I'm listening to these people. I'm looking at the metrics and I'm saying, okay, let's go deeper. Right. I feel like it was a perfect example of John Gruden listening to the critics, but also being true to himself. Right. So like going for it on fourth down on the 34-yard line, he's always been criticized for being too conservative, goes for it there. He's always been criticized and rightfully so for being terrible at throwing the red flag. Like his challenges, he's like batting like, he's right like 7% of the time.
Yeah, he's coach's under challenges. 10%. He's under
10%. So he didn't do the challenge. He just called the timeout. So it's like, look, it didn't ruin my coach's challenge percentage because it wasn't officially a coach's challenge.
He looks down at that flag and just got
it back. Yep. So those three things make me say that John Gruden's listening to the critics more. He's throwing the ball downfield more often, letting Carr cook essentially. Going for it in fourth down and then not doing that challenge. But on the flip side, he's still him in the sense his game management is ridiculous, right? Run, run, pass when you're trying to draw out the clock. Still did that. And his clock management is still weird, like not kicking the field goal when you should have, risking fumbles and interceptions and the like, muff snaps, right? Like that's always a possibility in every play now.
Dude, so it's like, notice the freaking snap on the last, how high that snap was on the last field goal.
There's a lot of them, dude.
I was trying to find a screen grab of Cole and how good a play that was getting that high snap down for the field goal, because that was he had to like reach up with both hands up high to get that snap.
All right, so that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I've been thinking about this for a while, and I've been as jacked up and juiced about our defense as any Raiders fan, right? How long have we been saying, as long as this podcast has existed, we've said, oh my God, we just have to have not an atrocious defense. Like I'm not asking for a top 10 defense. I'm not asking for a top 5 defense. I'm not asking for a plus 12 turnover margin. Just give us an average defense. We've seen what the Raiders are capable of and Derek Carr is capable of with just like a regular below average defense. Give us a, give us just an average defense and we're going to turn some heads. And that's what's happening, right? These last three games, the Raiders are an average defense, which if we were like the Ravens or Steelers or Patriots, if this was a podcast on the Patriots, we'd be pissed. Like, oh my God, this defense is taking a dump. They're just average now. Average is a good thing now, right? So the Raiders, 15th in points per game at 24, right? Better than average. Better than average. In yards per game, 16th. In yards per game. Average. In passing yards per game, average. The only thing we're hurting on is rushing yards per game. That one, we're 21st, right?
And that was the first game we gave up almost 200 yards to the best running team.
And that was playing the best, arguably the best running team in football in the Ravens.
Well, they are right now. They're leading the league in rushing.
Right? And on top of that, we've also played an extra quarter and a half or so of football because we've had two overtime games. So that kind of skews these averages a little bit, right? But even then, 15th in points per game, 14th in yards per game, 13th in passing yards per game. So better than average and all that, 21st in rushing yards per game. So an average defense. We have an average defense. And what do we always say? Give us an average or even below average defense, and we're going to turn some heads. We're going to play well. 3-0 now. Obviously, Derek Carr's playing lights out. Offense is playing lights out. Receivers are playing lights out. But the defense is also average. And that's also given Gruden and Carr an opportunity to just like play hopefully normal football. If anything, the defense is keeping our offense in the game early in games. Because back-to-back-to-back games, Derek Carr's been off early. Like the first quarter and a half of every game, he's terrible. And then he just goes off, right? And he just becomes like MVP caliber Derek Carr, you know, halfway through the second quarter and on into overtime.
Yeah, so, once Derek Carr gets the info off of John Gruden's scripted plays, once he gets that info to be able to compute that info, he's able to go into the right to write plays, you know, because not the teams aren't going to run the exact same defensive scheme exactly the same way as they did in previous weeks. They're going to kind of change it up a little bit for you specifically. So just kind of slotting what they're doing now and how their calls look now as opposed to what they looked like on tape, that's really what the first 15 scripted plays are for. And that can be a little bit of why Carr isn't as sharp and the offense isn't as sharp the first quarter.
So the question is this average to, which is average, which is a fantastic run for a Raiders defense, right? Is this run of mediocrity that we're so happy about sustainable? Because we've seen back-to-back seasons, we've started off hot, not our defense, but the team started off hot, and we've petered out later on. Is this defensive success sustainable? I say it is, and this is why. One, we've played some really good offensive teams, right? Ravens. The Steelers are, even though the win looks like less and less good as the Steelers have struggles have moved on, but Ben's still hard to bring down. The talented receivers in Pittsburgh are still there. Jacoby Brissett played the game of his life as a Dolphin. They still have incredible receiving threats in Miami that we were able to keep in check, deep balls, etc.
If I can talk about Jacoby Brissett for a second.
Sure.
This guy is not a slap. He's not a slap dick. He wasn't given the opportunity to play in Indianapolis. He was backing up Brady in fucking New England. He wasn't going to play there. Fine. Yeah. He got traded to Indianapolis. He played a couple games. They wanted to get, you know, a veteran guy. They got Rivers, and then Brissett backed him up. After the season, Reich wanted to get Wentz in there, and they shipped Brissett, and he signed with the Dolphins. The Dolphins, he's playing the fucking Fitzy role, and, you know, Tua is what is he going to be? I don't know if they fall in love with him or don't fall in love with him, but Jacoby Brissett is a legit quarterback in this league. He's a fringe starting quarterback, and he's, you know, he's better than those rookie quarterbacks that you see out there. He's you know, better than those guys right now, at least. Maybe not when they develop, but he's not some just shitty quarterback out there. He's a good quarterback, and especially when he has weapons.
He's serviceable. He's serviceable. He was not. He's better than your. He's 1,000 times better than your average backup quarterback. Right? I think he's better than Tua. right? Like
I think so.
Brissett played better than everyone's like, oh, you played the backup quarterback. The backup's better than the starter right now, right? Tua Tagovailoa, Jacoby Brissett's better than Tua, you know, September 29th, 2021, right?
Yeah.
But is it sustainable, right? We've played some good offenses, some with some holes and some warts that we're learning about later, but we've played some good offenses and we're still playing average to slightly above average in most metrics. This is why I think it's going to be sustainable. One, we don't have a bunch of fluky, one is we've played a lot of good teams. Our record, like the players, the teams are playing down the stretch, not a lot of great offenses, right? We'll have the Chargers on Monday night, good offense. Bears, atrocious, maybe the worst offense in football, playing terrible. Broncos, decent. They haven't played anybody to be able to tell how good their offense is yet. They've played three teams that are all 0-3, right? So we don't know what they have.
Yeah.
Eagles offense, terrible. Giants offense, terrible. Obviously, the Chiefs are great. Bengals D-line, terrible. Cowboys offense, good. Washington offense, not good. So we've got, three good offenses we're going to play moving forward, right? Chiefs twice and the Cowboys in the next nine games. The rest of the offenses, pretty bad. Pretty bad. I mean, our defense is going to look amazing up against the Bears. So that's reason number two. The last one, we're not good at the high fluky stats, which I call them, like stats that are not really sustainable, kind of flash in the pan stats, things like that. So for instance, we're only plus one in the turnover differential. Plus one. We've only gotten one turnover more than we've turned it over. We're not like the Cowboys who are at plus five. That's something that's not going to happen. Now it's true. There are DBs that are better at getting interceptions. There are linebackers and defensive ends that are better at strip sacks and causing fumbles. That's certainly true, but it's a more fluky stat than pressures, tackles, yards per game. Like these things can be streaky. So if our defense was playing well and we were at, 13 sacks, 14 sacks this season, plus five turnover differential, like, okay, that's awesome. That's great that we're doing it. I don't know how sustainable that's
sustainable.
Is.
Yeah.
We don't have that plus one turnover differential, no defensive touchdowns and no crazy, like Max Crosby's like four sack game, right? The sacks aren't that high. It's all consistent numbers. Yards per game are well, pressures per game are high, pressures per drop back are high. All the consistent high number stats is part of our success. The crazy fluky stats, high sacks, plus five turnover differential, we don't have that. So that tells me, Soto, that this defense that's playing average, which is amazing by Raiders standards, is sustainable. This is something that can continue.
The thing that I look at when I look at our defense is the players that we brought in, they are playing up to their capabilities. They're not playing like off their ass. That's one of the things that I pointed to with the Dolphins possibly having a drop back this year was they had some guys. They lost Van Noy. He signed back with the Patriots. Funny how that works. The Patriots, you can't play anymore. I'm going to release you. Oh, you balled out this year with the fucking Miami. Come on back. but they lost Van Noy and a lot of fluky things. A lot of the guys on that defense were playing well above because they did a patchwork style defense similar to what the Raiders are doing this year. But those players like played off their ass. And the guys that are performing for us this year, they're not really doing anything that they haven't done already in the past. It's just they have better complement around them and they're putting a little bit better position to succeed. Solomon Thomas probably is playing a lot better than he has, but he's playing a different position. So that that can be excused, but Perriman is who he is. Littleton is showing he is more at who he was with the Rams. Hayward is, a former Pro Bowler who's, playing back to form. So we're not having all these, like you said, any of these crazy swings in play. It's just solid, consistent defense.
And so that's what I'm looking at. Is this something that can continue for the entire season? And all the data to me says yes, which is great. And that's also we got to do like a really, really big like feature on this, like a show just based on this, because it's really important, I think, for fans to realize how big it is that we have an average defense. We've had a top 10 defense twice in the last 30 years. Like, this is an institutional problem the Raiders have dealt with almost my entire life. As long as I've been watching the Raiders, this has been an institutional problem.
And let's talk about that second stint of Art Shell.
Mm-hmm.
They were that good defensively because teams got a lead on us and just stopped scoring.
Yep.
Because they just sat on the ball and just ran the ball out and ran the clock out. So that's why that's why we were so good defensive as far as points allowed, because we were scoring like fucking 12, 13 points a game. So teams would get scored two touchdowns, 17 points. I'm like, all right, we're good. They're not coming back.
We're ranked 15th in points per game, right? So we're average, right? Points per game. That's the best ranking we've had since 2002.
Super Bowl year.
Super Bowl year, right? We went to the Super Bowl on that when we were sick. We were sixth overall in points per game, ranked sixth, which is phenomenal, right? 2002. I was a freshman in college. I was still a teenager. That's the best we've had in 19 seasons, just being average. Just being 15th. That's how big this is, that we're an average defense and we're 3-0. And Derek Carr's having an MVP caliber season. And Max Crosby's having a defensive player of the year caliber season. I mean, this is huge. Like, we're not the Bears. Like, we're not the Pats. Like, our defense doing this is something really. This is like the Bears getting like Aaron Rodgers and having this crazy passing attack. Like, it's just not what they do, right? The Raiders having an average defense is so big and so unlike the recent Raiders. Cherish it.
It's definitely something that we should just appreciate, because for how long we've had just defensive coordinators that just were not getting the job done. Mm-hmm. They may have been good coaches and they go somewhere else, but I don't know that we've had a defensive coordinator who went somewhere else and shined as a defensive coordinator. They may have gone somewhere else. And I mean, look at Ken Norton now is with Seattle, and Seattle's got one of the worst defenses in the league. They give up the most points in the league. You mentioned the Bears. God damn, I feel bad for Justin Fields, dude. Matt Nagy just does not know what to do with him. He's gonna get that poor kid killed. But back to the Raiders. You don't need to be a world beater on defense, because the rules are made up for scoring. The rules are made up for quarterbacks to succeed and excel. Mm-hmm. So you being an average team, it's a lot of the stuff that makes the teams better than us as far as points goes, could be circumstance. And some could be, you know, if a team gets off to a big lead and then other teams have to change their game plan to make it more predictable, that could make it easier to defend. But also the turnover thing, like you said, a lot of turnovers can help. You know, we're not getting those turnovers right now. It could be a fluky thing. So maybe we'll get some more turnovers as the season goes on, and it'll help our points per game, I guess.
So this is another question. Who should get the most credit for the Raiders' defensive success? Because, again, like we mentioned, this is historic. Best defense since 2002. Top three defenses in the last like 30 years, just being like 15th in points per game. Like, this is massive. So in your mind, Soto, who should get the most credit for this success?
The most credit's got to be Gus Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to take a look at, because that's really the only thing, the main thing that's different. There's a couple of differences as far as players coming in and playing well, but Gus Bradley had to identify former players like Perryman and Hayward, who were playing lights out, mm-hmm. from that used to play for him before, to come on this team and slotted in those spots, and they're performing well. Also, I mean, because from what we know of John Gruden, he doesn't visit the defensive locker room very much,
or he probably doesn't know where it is.
Coach, you know, the defensive like, coach side of the coaching offices.
Does John Gruden know where like his linebackers coach's office is?
I doubt it.
I don't think he does.
I still see John Gruden having one of those like button intercoms, those old school like instead of like
that's way too technologically advanced for him. He's got one of those like strings with a bell on the end, like he's like to call his butler in like a 1970s French chateau. He's like ding 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 ding.
Yeah, I just see him like just Hey, come into my office.
Yeah. Yeah, Gus Bradley clearly should get a lot of credit here. I mean, you look at I'm just so glad that he whiffed in Jacksonville as a head coach. Otherwise, he'd be getting a million offers in this offseason.
Dude, if he was given one more year in Jacksonville, that defense balled out the year after he left. Oh man, he'd probably still be there. He'd probably still be there. Yeah. They probably still have Yannick.
Yep. I'm just so glad that he whiffed that one time, because if he can turn again, like I said all last offseason, as soon as they got rid of Gunther, I was like, whoever gets this gig is going to go places. Like, all you have to do is make this defense not as bad as Gunther made it, which any defensive coordinator worth his salt should be able to do that. But to make it average, above average, this franchise's defense, again, thank God Gus Bradley whiffed as a head coach. Otherwise, he'd be gone at the end of the season. Instead, screw giving John Gruden a 10-year contract. Give Gus Bradley a 10-year coaching contract.
For sure, man. Extend that man ASAP.
A lot of credit, I think, has to be given to Yannick Ngakoue, because I feel like him on the other end of Max Crosby is creating such havoc for lines to defend both guys on both ends. And if you try to defend both, then our defensive tackles are finding success, right? One of our four linemen is in the face of the quarterback every single play. Right, Max Crosby now being healthy and sober, Yannick Ngakoue, the great free agent acquisition, our defensive tackles all having like careers, like reinvigorating all their careers at defensive tackle, and that of course is freeing up linebackers and DBs to be able to cover the way they want, because a quarterback's under duress, it makes all their jobs easier. I think a lot of credit needs to be given to Yannick Ngakoue, even though he's not having some crazy like 10 sacks, he's not on pace to have like a 16 sack season or anything like that. But he was the missing key that made Max Crosby be able to be better, which in turn makes the defensive tackles be able to be better, which in turn makes the DBs be able to be better. He was the first domino effect that made everyone else on the defense better, starting with him. So, yeah, obviously Gus Bradley's going to get a lot of the credit, but Yannick Ngakoue was universally regarded by everybody as a great signing, and it's proven to be even better than we thought.
Can we talk a little bit about Carl Nassib and his fucking bull rush?
Everybody's Jesus playing better.
Christ.
Everybody's playing better. Even Nassib all of a sudden is playing great.
Dude, it's like, it's almost like Gus Bradley or somebody got into Carl Nassib's ear and was like, look, man, quit with the cute shit. Stick your arm in his chest and push him back. And when he does that, it's almost comical. It's like, it's almost the reverse of, the movie The Blind Side, where Michael Orr, this character, fucking took the defender and just like pushed him off to the end of the field. Mm-hmm. It's like in reverse. Nassib does that to the tackle. He just gets his arm in. Like, I haven't seen that consistently since we had Khalil Mack, when he would just stick one arm into the chest of the tackle and just drive him back into the quarterback. That's what Nassib's doing, and it's pretty funny to watch.
Yeah. I think that those are two. I think it's 1A, 1B on who gets the credit for the Raiders' success on defense. It's Gus Bradley as like obviously like the main orchestrator of everything, and Yannick Ngakoue just a domino effect of making everyone better. All right, we got the Chargers coming to our town because we're live in LA County in Long Beach. Basically, the Raiders' vacation home, SoFi Stadium now. Right, every time we go there, it's going to be more Raider fans than not. And according to Paul Gutierrez of ESPN, 74% of the crowd at SoFi Stadium this upcoming Monday night, Raider fans, which sounds low to me, Soto. That sounds low to me. Only three out of like 25% of that stadium is going to be Charger fans. I don't know if I buy that. I feel like it's like 90-10.
I think I kind of buy this for the reason that it's a lot of the Charger fans are really wishy-washy, man. Mm-hmm. They're not. I mean, if the Raiders were playing on a high school football field, Raider fans would fucking pack that shit.
Yeah.
But Charger fans, oh, I don't want to go to fucking the Home Depot fucking field or wherever the fuck they were playing before. but it's SoFi now. It's a nice state. Ooh, it's bougie. It's so nice. They want to fucking take pictures for fucking Instagram and fucking all that shit. Okay, that's where I see those bougie ass fucking Fairweather Charger fans showing up. But they're still not going to fucking be more than even close to the Raider fans.
All right, so Justin Herbert, Raiders Chargers defense, good defensive line. Second-year quarterback, still kind of figuring his thing out. How do you see Monday Night Football game going? Because Derek Carr has proven the bonkers good in prime time. This Chargers team, still kind of what we know the Chargers have been, being able to throw away wins and let like turnovers be an issue, special teams be an issue. They're better than last season, but I think that's still part of the Chargers' DNA.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Justin Herbert. Herbert, he's a special player, and he's going to prove how special a player he is moving forward, but he's still prone to making a lot of mistakes. He had, on my count, he had questionably two, probably three interceptions that were dropped. Yeah. So he could have as many as six interceptions on the season, and right now he only has three. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it's very obvious how to defend Justin Herbert from a defensive line perspective. You want to put your best pass rusher above the right tackle against Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert throws on the run, running to his throwing arm side, mm-hmm. as good as any quarterback in the league. And he'll throw it deep, and he doesn't give a shit. And he has the weapons out there to be able to make the plays. You know, he has Jared Cook now at tight end, who's a good receiver. He has Mike Williams, who's speedy, and jump up and get the ball. And he has Keenan Allen.
Mike Williams having a career season. Yeah, I know, because I've got him on fantasy. He's going bonkers.
And Keenan Allen just knows how to get open. And he's really good running to his right. If you can force him off to his left, he's just not nearly as good. Two of his interceptions that he's had have been throwing over to the left side. So if we can pressure him to his face and make him run the opposite way or move the opposite way, that's a good thing for us. These wide receivers that they are, they're playing off their ass right now. Yeah. The two main receivers they have are Williams and Allen. Williams is the deep threat. He's the guy that takes the top off the ball. And they use Allen more in the intermediate routes and to move the sticks.
I hate Keenan Allen's beard.
It's ugly, dude. It's like a Hezekiah thing.
Yeah, and it sticks out like the whole, the chin strap with like the holes and just sticks out stupid. Like, I can't believe I dislike a man's beard. It has to be really bad for me to say your beard's bad.
Plus, he's a good player, so yeah, fuck him.
Yeah, so fuck him. So, like, again, this is our fourth straight game of a quarterback who's tough to rush. Like, Lamar Jackson and Brissett are just great running the ball. Ben Roethlisberger, while still like stationary, obviously not a good runner and old, he's still huge. Like, he was able to get passes off with like Crosby just like hanging off his shoulder, right?
Plus, he Justin gets the ball out quick. He knows where to go.
He gets
with
it
the
quick,
ball.
Right? Justin Herbert is still another guy with good that can move well, but he holds the ball a little bit longer enough for me to think that we can get like this could be one of our first games with like some decent sacks, like four or five sacks, something like that. The pass rush actually gets home. Even though I could be wrong because Herbert's pretty mobile, right? Wait till we get, you know, play like New York and like Washington football team. Ooh, and stuff like
Danny
that.
Danny Dimes loves to turn that ball over.
Then we're going to get some turnovers and get some strip sacks. But I think I'm 50-50 if this is the breakout game for our defensive line to get like a five-sack game.
Yeah, this is a volatile game, and it rests solely on the shoulders of Justin Herbert. Mm-hmm. If he's able to get the ball out, and he's given the time to get the ball out, and it doesn't necessarily have to be on time. I think he's more dangerous on the broken plays and the extended plays than anything else. If we're able to disrupt his timing and keep him more focused on the rush and instead of his eyes downfield, I think we can have a pretty good game defensively against him. As far as running the ball, I mean, they're like we are. They're about 90 yards like running a game. They basically run the ball to keep the defense honest. Yeah. You know, they don't really run the ball.
It's basically a rule that you have to, and so that's why they do it.
Yeah. Eckler's more dangerous out of the backfield as a receiver than anything else. As far as their defense goes, they only have 2 sacks by their defensive line.
Yeah, they're blitzing. You know,
Joey Bosa has 1.5 sacks. And, all the other sacks are by their blitzing linebackers or safeties.
And this is another theme that we've had. Like, we keep playing like quarterbacks that are hard to sack, and we keep playing defenses that love to blitz,
yeah.
Which is exactly up Derek Carr's alley.
Yeah, that's fine
with
me.
Like, blitz him, like, you'll get, you know, every now and then you'll get your sacks, right? You'll get a 15-yard sack on Derek Carr. You'll get a strip sack. You'll cause him to fumble every now and then. That pick six on Sunday, Carr was under pressure. That was part of, you know, it was part miscommunication, part did run the right route, you know, all the other things, but he was also under pressure. So you'll get your big plays by blitzing Derek Carr, but this is also how Derek Carr gets his 380-yard, 400-yard passing games. If you blitz and go in man coverage, he is so good pre-snap, he will read you all day long. He'll make an error.
Knows exactly what you're doing.
One out of every 10, one out of every 12 plays, like, you'll get home, but the other 9 or 11 plays, he's going to read it perfectly. Like, I'm very curious to see what Carr's passing numbers are going to be when he plays a defense that's kind of like the Raiders defense, where it's just the down lineman, 7 people back in zone. Like, how well is Derek Carr going to be in that situation? Because if you blitz him, he's going to put up 400 yards on you, like he's been doing all season. Yeah.
Blitz on your own risk. Their linebackers are you know, they're quick. They're not overly physical. Mm-hmm. They're good in coverage, but nothing that we haven't seen already. So I don't think anything special there.
Yep.
The most special player, I think, in the back end, besides Bosa, is going to be Derwin James. He's healthy. He's back. But we've played special players, in the secondary 2 weeks in a row. Fitzpatrick is one of the best, you know, safeties in the league, and Xavier Howard is one of the best corners in the league, and Carr did just fine. So he didn't shy away from me either. He had 2 long catches, against each one. So, yeah, we know who these guys are. We play them twice every year. The thing that we have to focus on now is how are we going to make things difficult for Justin Herbert? Because if he goes off, it's going to be a hard day. It's going to be a long day for us.
Yeah. Chargers 2-1, Raiders 3-0, Chargers 3rd in the AFC West. So, the Broncos aren't for real. So when we, you know, Broncos actually play a team.
The Broncos have not played a team that has a win.
0-9 combined record. Broncos opponents. They're confident. They're playing with confidence.
We have a mutual friend that's a Broncos fan. And I'm like, bro, stop. Stop. Right now, just stop.
Yeah.
These teams barely have heartbeats. And you're sitting here puffing up your chest over 3-0. You're beating 2-3 teams that are 0-3. Mm-hmm.
You ready to do some what up winbags?
Interestingly, yes, I am.
Yeah, because you'll notice a theme in these what up winbags. You know, I want to make it very clear that it's not just me that sees your irrational and evil look at Derek Carr and how much you hate him.
I kind of knew this was coming because everyone sees it beforehand.
Everyone sees it. William Merchant, I'd love to hear Soto redo his sarcastic 5 things he loves about Carr presentation. I'm guessing it would actually have 5 substantive items. So if you don't remember, a few episodes ago, we did a role reversal because you hate Derek Carr and I think he's great. We're like, okay, let's be fair and objective. I'll say 5 things that Derek Carr needs to work on, 5 things he's bad at. And Soto will do 5 things that are good about Derek Carr. It's like, okay, great. So I took it very seriously. I took the segment, did my research, did it right. And I said, all right, here's five genuine things that Derek Carr needs to work on. And I was genuine about it, right? He's brittle, the turnovers, you know. What did you do? You half-assed it.
Three of the five
were just like press conference stuff.
That's not true.
You could not say 5 true things good about Derek Carr. So William Merchant, I would love to do this. But there's 0% chance that you, Soto, would take it seriously and actually deliver 5 good things on Carr.
I mean, you never know. I might not.
TD Sly says, watching Soto backtrack on how he feels about Derek Carr is pretty satisfying. I'm not going to lie. So you're not even saying, like, I'm wrong, Derek Carr is good. You're like, well, he's just doing X, Y, and Z. Like, you know, it's just what I've been saying all along.
Yeah, it has. It is.
Uh-huh.
I told him, I said it a billion times. I don't hate Derek Carr. He needs to push the ball down the field, and I will like him a lot more because he's better at it and he's good at it, and he needs to do that for this team to be successful, and that's what he's doing.
Yeah, all you need from Derek Carr is for him to put the entire team on his shoulders, play lights out, be super clutch, throw for 400 yards,
nope,
and completely take over the game and play at an MVP level. And then you'll be satisfied with him. You won't say he's good or bad, but now you're saying, let's not burn him at the stake. That's all he's got to do. That's all he's got to do is be MVP. The
thing is if you want to win in this league, you have to have that type of quarterback that's able to do that. I'm not saying he has to put up those type of numbers, but if he's pushing the ball down the field more, that's just, you know, going to be what it's going to be.
Okay, and just to prove this isn't just a full-on Juan Soto Bass session, Nick 209, a little ode to Nick Diaz, I'm assuming. Woo. I don't always agree with Soto, but 9 times out of 10, he knows what he's talking about. Great platform. I always look forward to this show. So assuming this is a Nick Diaz account, this guy was probably stoned when he sent that.
Nick Diaz, that is Nick Diaz. I want you to know that right now. His personal friend of mine. Nick Diaz is a big fan of the Autumn Windbags. So
yeah. And a big fan of you, which kind of shows his questionable tastes. All right, so we'll be back Monday night for the post-game show, another primetime game. Chargers, Raiders coming to L.A. for a Chargers game. Really good guest plan for next week, a Bears fan, as we lead into the Bears. We have more guests booked than we have shows available for them. We've got a lot of really good guests coming up. Ones you know, ones you don't know. It's going to be really fun. So as the season rolls on, until the post-game show, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you check us out on YouTube as well. We'll post special segments, special interviews, stuff that don't always end up on the podcast. Plus, you get to see our faces, which is always fun as well. Until next time, later.